Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this Constitution
of
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for
this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
And I can make a firm pledge under my plan, no family making less than $250,000.
Let me say it as simply as I can.
Any form of
transparency and the rule of law will be the
touchstone
of this president.
That, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Even presidents need reminding that our rights come from nature and God and not from government. The right that makes all the difference now is the right to choose our own leaders. And you are entitled to the clearest possible choice, because the time for choosing is
Missouri
drawing near.
Grassroots Radio is proud to present your favorite hillbilly, Mr. Kevin Harned.
Welcome to Hillbilly Logic and Missouri Grassroots Radio. We've got a lot of things coming up on future broadcasts. Unfortunately, this time of year, we're down to crunch time. We're down to the last 3 weeks before the election. So we have a lot of things going on. We have a lot of different rallies. Unless we go on the road, we've got a lot of folks in different last-minute pushes. So the lack of some of the guests that we normally have. Dino, which I don't know if you guys are aware of it or not, but if anybody needs an excellent auctioneer, and that would be even for charitable events or anything else, Dean Whiteman, who is on here with me often, he is an excellent auctioneer. He's got a pretty good gig. He gets out there on stilts and a Stetson hat and lets it fly. So Dean knows how to work a crowd pretty good. It's a show in itself. And if you need any auctioneering done, it's Action Auction. So you can visit them or look them up on Google or any other search engine, but Action Auction. And it's a good time for all, and it's a good way to raise funds. Dean's helped us out on a few fundraisers with different military events or trying to help some soldiers. And they have done a tremendous job, him and his wife, Cindy. Some different things we're going to touch on tonight. Again, as we're watching, and we are going to touch on some Missouri news, but just touching around, looking at the nation, one of the things that had to jump out at me, one of the biggest problems that we've got right now in this economy has to do with energy. Also, what some can amount to as hyperinflation, but definitely energy. And whenever we're looking at, gas prices almost double what they were whenever the president took office. Almost 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago. This has dramatically, and I know Dave's talked about this as well as I have. It doesn't take a mathematical genius to start figuring out that people have only so much expendable income. And whenever they are putting an extra $50 a week in the gas tank, that is taking away from things that they could be spending their hard-earned dollars on. And in that process, it hurts the economy. It hurts those businesses that would have benefited from those funds. And guess what, folks? It's going out the tailpipe. So really, you're getting no extra added benefit for your purchase. So you got no purchasing power that's being increased there. Something else that it does, too, that you very seldom hear anybody talking about is it really throws our trade deficit into a major tizzy, because we are sending that much more money out of the country. Whenever we were paying that, higher oil prices, higher fuel prices, if it's not domestically produced, which I understand that domestically produced doesn't always mean that it's also consumed in this country. But the bottom line is that whenever we are making these major oil purchases and fuel purchases out of the country, that adds to our trade deficit, and it adds to it dramatically. We've seen on the news a whole lot lately about California and the extra high prices in California. Got a lot of folks looking and acting like they're victims, including the governor, Jerry Brown. Of course, the first thing that gets thrown out there is price gouging. I'm not going to say that price gouging never occurs. What I am going to say is that California has done everything that it possibly can to be unfriendly to any type of carbon-based fuels. Well, as a matter of fact, almost any energy, period. Now, they have reaped a little bit of the pain because of their policies. And what are they doing? They're screaming victim. As far as I'm concerned, here's the thing is that it's really a catch-22, because the liberal left wants fuel prices. They want gas prices to be at least $5 a gallon. You don't have to take my word for it. You can even look up, search and find videos of President Obama talking about the good of high fuel prices. Also, a lot of these other liberals that talk about all the benefits of high fuel prices. And one of the things that they're trying to do is they're trying to make their green energy sources more competitive. And as long as oil prices are low, as long as we can get electrical rates from other things like coal and other things, what they want to do is they want to drive the price up on all this stuff so that it forces a change. Well, in the process, who gets hurt in most of that scenario? Everybody does. The economy does in the whole country. But who else gets hurt? The poor. And again, they try to compensate with that by throwing grants around, by throwing some other things around. So once again, much like what happens whenever we're trying to put our kids in college or anything along those lines, what we have is a situation where the middle class and the lower middle class make too much to get any assistance. Therefore, they do shoulder the brunt of many of these different types of riggings of the market, of many things. But where I was getting at in a very long roundabout way was California. I read today that now we have a fracking lawsuit that is filed by environmental groups against the state regulators. And it's reported that environmental groups sued the state of California on Tuesday, and it was in an effort to stop hydraulic fracturing as regulators attempt to devise new rules for the controversial oil and gas extraction practice. And what's making it controversial? They are. It's, all of these different – there's been films that have been put out that have been tainted. They've been intentionally deceptive. They've lied repeatedly. A lot of it, like natural gas and a lot of these other things, whenever they're occurring naturally, and that's why they call it that, by the way, but whenever they're occurring naturally, you can have some of this perking up to the surface. And it can be in even in pond water or other things whenever it's coming up, and you have natural instances where you have this happening in different places on occasion in these large deposits, and they try to exploit that as in its pollution from the fracking process along with other things. Now again, one of my wildest examples is in Texas, where they tried to get a judge, and actually I believe was successful for a while with one, but where they sued because they said that an environmental impact study wasn't done to see what the effects was of the drilling on this lizard that lived in that area. They weren't saying they was not saying that the lizard is suffering because of the drilling. What they were saying is that we haven't done a study to see if it affects the lizard, so therefore it should be stopped. So they try to stop any type of modern fuel extraction. And what this does is the lawsuit accuses the regulator, the California Department of Conservation, Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources, with failing to evaluate the risks, even though fracking was used for 600 wells in the state last year. So fracking, whenever you're looking at it, what it does is it's pumping chemical-laced water and sand into a well to open cracks that release oil and gas. And we've had a lot of debate over the country, over this process. Bottom line, whenever you look at North Dakota, look at the economy in North Dakota, and this is all derived from this. It's led to bans in one state and several municipalities, yet the industry does insist that the practice is safe so long as the wells are properly built. So, and here's where we get a nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice. How do you like that name? Earth Justice filed the lawsuit in Alameda County Superior Court on behalf of the Center for Biological Diversity. Do you notice anything with even the names on these folks? Earthworks, Environmental Working Group, and the Sierra Club. And first of all, one of the things that I would suggest is that that you go to the Sierra Club, look up their recommendations on politicians that are running for office in your area, and I would highly consider that you look hard at the opponent to whoever they are recommended, because the Sierra Club is these groups and these clubs with these nice names, they're nothing but socialistic, communistic little organizations that have waged war on capitalism as we know it. Whenever they are talking about public outcry, you know, they're very organized. They claim that public outcry has finally forced the department to take a look at fracking. Earth Justice Attorney George Torgan said in a statement, they've held workshops and say they're considering regulations, but the problem needs attention now before too much damage is done, before they can realize the profits and the impact on the economy is really what he should be saying. If you'd like to call in and comment, it's 347-677-1835. 347-677-1835. But whenever we're looking at that kind of a thing. So once again, California, we have the environmental groups that are including Center for Biological Diversity, Earthworks, Environmental Working Group, and the Sierra Club, plus Earth Justice. Filing these lawsuits and raising these complaints, trying to stop any process of fracking. They're trying to shut it down so that before anything is realized on the economic impact and benefit, and so before anybody can even prove that the process is safe whenever it's done properly. So that is one of the topics that really, really, really impacts. And what I'd say, you know what, if they drive their gas to $8 a gallon, so be it. Let their citizens raise hell with the local state government, and let these guys like Jerry Brown and these others that harbor this mentality, let them have to answer to the citizens for that. And of course, you know, they'll always want to just throw the finger up in the air and blame, the oil companies themselves, along with others. It's quite disgusting. One of the things that's also popping out there, and that is, what about free speech in the West? you know, there's some things that is going on to where a lot of speech is being declared discriminatory. A lot of speech is being declared hate speech. There's all kinds of different things that we are trying or that is being challenged in courts, or else laws are being made. And they're trying to hide behind Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes' statement that free speech does not give you the right to shout fire in a crowded theater. And that is being used extensively whenever they're trying to push for these restrictions on free speech. And some Western countries have classic blasphemy laws, such as Ireland, which in 2009 criminalized the publication or utterance of blasphemous matter deemed grossly abusive or insulting in relation to matters held sacred by any religion. The Russian Duma recently proposed a law against insulting religious beliefs. Other countries allow the arrest of people who threaten strife by criticizing religions or religious leaders. So we can't even criticize religious leaders in some countries. In Britain, for instance, a 15-year-old girl was arrested 2 years ago for burning a Quran. Now, you know, are we advocating that everybody go out and try to just irritate or instigate or anything else? No, I'm not. But the bottom line is that whenever we are putting these restrictions or these abilities to lock people up because we don't like what they say or because we don't like what they do. And unfortunately, with liberals, more and more and more, it's about what they say. It's about what you say. It's less about what you do. Whenever I really, really, really came to realize that was listening to some of the court cases. And one of them was the Menendez brothers. Now, the Menendez brothers had allegedly, which they had pretty good evidence to back it up, they had written their parents' names on a shotgun shells. And whenever they had shot and killed their parents, this was before they threw a party afterwards. But the mother had actually they had determined that the mother had actually tried to crawl behind the couch to get away from the blasts. Now, and I don't know if it was Eric Menendez. Seems like it may have been that broke down on the stage or on the stand and cried. And one of the jurors afterwards, whenever they were talking to her, they was talking to the juror, and she expressed that she felt sorry for him, that he was, you know, he felt bad about what he did. Now, too often, what we are seeing is remorse for the consequences of the act that's been performed and the fact that they're going to jail or going to prison or are going to face the death penalty. But to a liberal, and I'm talking new liberal, not classic yesterday's liberal, but to the left mindset, he's remorseful and therefore we should show pity on him. Much like the pity he showed to his mother, the woman who birthed him, and then to have a party afterwards. You know, these are things that just blow my mind. On the other hand, we'll see a lot of times that stricter sentences are issued out, and many times they'll say, well, he didn't seem like he had any remorse. He showed no remorse. You know, so too often in this country and in others, it's more about what you're thinking than what about you're doing. So it's hits at home too, because even the Obama administration supported the passage of a resolution in the UN Human Rights Council to create an international standard restricting some anti-religious speech. Its full name is Combating Intolerance, Negative Stereotyping and Stigmatization of and Discrimination, Incitement to Violence and Violence Against Persons Based on Religious or Beliefs. And Egypt's UN ambassador heralded the resolution as exposing the true nature of free speech and recognizing that freedom of expression has been sometimes misused to insult religion. Why aren't we hearing anything about that? Why are we not hearing that this administration, that the current president administration, has supported the passage of this resolution in the UN that is going to restrict speech and actually enable them to charge with crimes for speaking out against some religious leaders or some religious laws? These things are, you know, we cannot allow this kind of stuff to carry on. I mean, here we had that filmmaker who really now, whenever we look at Benghazi, it's this individual is not even really being blamed for that because it wasn't a spontaneous activity. But he's being carted away in California on suspicion of probation violations. And the administration had openly said that they would like to be able to charge him with something. The Dutch politician Geert Wilders went through years of litigation before he was acquitted last year on charges of insulting Islam by voicing anti-Islamic views. In the Netherlands, and Italy, cartoonists and comedians have been charged with insulting religion through caricatures or jokes. Is this a direction we want to go? Do we want to have anti-blasphemy laws in this country? That's the way we're headed. Anyway, at a Washington conference last year to implement the resolution, Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton declared that it would protect both the right to practice one's religion freely and the right to express one's opinion without fear. But it isn't clear how speech can be protected if the yardstick is how people react to speech, particularly in countries where people riot over a single cartoon. And you know, if that's going to be the yardstick, if the yardstick is going to be how somebody responds to what you say, and that if they respond in a violent way, that we should restrict your ability to say it, folks, where are we headed? Clinton suggested that free speech resulting in sectarian clashes or the destruction of the defacement of vandalization or vandalization of religious sites was not, as she put it, fair game. Secretary of State Clinton, I mean, it's good to know that you guys are deeming what is fair game and what isn't. Given that initiative, President Obama's UN address last month declaring America's support for free speech while laudable seemed confused. So, I mean, his statement seemed at odds with itself and with its efforts. And once again, we have the Jedi mind tricks. So in the United States, hate speech is presumably protected under the First Amendment. However, hate crime laws often redefine hateful expression as a criminal act. Just like in 2003, the Supreme Court addressed the conviction of a Virginia Ku Klux Klan member who burned a cross on private land. The court allowed for criminal penalties so long as the government could show that the act was intended to intimidate others. It was a distinction without meaning, since the state can simply cite the intimidating history of that symbol. So, you know what? I mean, regardless of how despicable we find some of these acts, whenever we have people that are being charged with crimes for expressing whatever, even if it is misguided, you know, if we think it's misguided, if we're charging them with crimes with expressing their freedom of speech on their own property, we better be careful. Because sooner or later, I mean, even though we may not participate in that, the noose will keep getting tighter. They will keep making laws more and more and more restrictive. And you know what? Pretty soon, they'll be knocking on the door for you. So we have to really, 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 the First Amendment is not just for popular speech. It is for unpopular speech. Popular speech doesn't need to be protected, not actively. Nothing like what unpopular speech would be. Other Western nations routinely bar forms of free speech considering hateful. For instance, Britain prohibits any abusive or insulting words meant to stir up racial hatred. Canada outlaws any writing, sign, or visible representation that incites hatred against any identifiable group. These laws ban free speech. They're based not only on its content, but on the reaction of others. So if somebody has an outrageous reaction to something you say, then you know what? It can be banned. Speakers are often called to answer for their division or their divisive or insulting speech before bodies like the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal. Just earlier this month, a Canadian court ruled that Mark Lemire, the webmaster of a far-right political site, could be punished for allowing third parties to leave insulting comments about homosexuals and blacks on the site. That also echoes the logic behind blasphemy laws. You know, federal court justice Richard Mosley ruled that the minimal harm caused, and that is to freedom of expression, is far outweighed by the benefit it provides to vulnerable groups and to the promotion of equality. Folks, we are moving further and further and further toward ridding ourselves of the First Amendment. And whenever we look at the most rapidly expanding limitations on free speech, we can find it in anti-discrimination laws. Many Western countries have actually extended such laws to public statements deemed insulting or derogatory to any group, race, or gender. And I'm sure to come sexual preference. And when we're looking at different examples in a closely watched case last year, we saw a French court that found fashion designer John Galliano guilty of making discriminatory comments in a Paris bar where he got into a cursing match with a couple using sexist and anti-Semitic terms. The judge, who in this case was Anne-Marie Sauterade, read a list of the bad words Galliano had used and adding that she found rather implausibly he had said dirty whore at least 1,000 times. Though he faced up to 6 months in jail, he was fined. So in a bar, he got into an exchange with a couple and found himself charged with anti-discriminatory language. Could have faced 6 months in jail. We have a comedian in Canada named Guy Earle, who was charged with violating the human rights of a lesbian couple after he got into a trash-talking session with a group of women during an open mic night at that club. One of the ladies, Lorna Party, said she suffered post-traumatic stress because of Earl's profane language and derogatory terms for lesbians. And, you know, again, we're looking at the reaction of others. Again, it's more about what somebody says than what somebody does. The Human Rights Tribunal ruled last year that since this was a matter of discrimination, free speech was not a defense, and the couple was awarded $23,000. Are you following me? You know, we're losing it. Some religious organizations are pushing for blasphemy laws. Religious individuals are increasingly targeted under anti-discrimination laws for their criticism of homosexuals and other groups. We see that every day. After Prop 8 in California was passed, we had homosexual groups that, and I'm not trying to indict an entire group of people, but we had individuals from these groups that went into Catholic churches and dropped shit in the offering plate, that vandalized churches, that made threats. I mean, do you remember reading any of that on the news? In 2008, a minister in Canada was not only forced to pay fines for uttering anti-gay sentiments, but was also enjoined from expressing such views in the future. So he was warned not to express his views in the future. So, again, I'm not saying that we have to like what any of these individuals are saying or doing. What I am saying is that we are legislating and by forms of treaty, giving up our First Amendment rights, even on an international level. When we have the current administration trying to push to enact these international hate speech bans. Even here in the United States, where speech is given, you know, pretty much the most protection among Western countries, there's been an effort to carve out potentially large categories to what the First Amendment would and would not apply to. While we've always prosecuted people who lie to achieve financial or other benefits, you know, some argue that government can outlaw any lie, regardless of whether the liar secured any economic gain. So, and some people have looked at the Stolen Valor Act signed by the previous president, George W. Bush, in 2006. They've looked at that, criticized it, because they said it made it a crime for people to lie about receiving military honors. That is disdainful as hell. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about it. I can't believe that people would lie about military honors. Whenever we have brave soldiers, men and women, dying in the act of protecting this country, you know. But again, this law, the Stolen Valor Act, you know, it looked like on the surface that, you know what, it's wrong, these people shouldn't do it, let's make it enforceable by law. The Supreme Court struck it down this year, but at least two liberal justices, which was Stephen Breyer and Elena Kagan, proposed that such laws should have less of a burden to be upheld as constitutional, so they shouldn't have to meet the requirements. The House responded with new legislation that would criminalize lies that was told with the intent to obtain any undefined tangible benefits. So, again, even if we may agree with the principles of some things, we have to be careful because the unintended consequences are going to be wide-ranging. The dangers really are obvious. You know, the government officials have long labeled whistleblowers, reporters, and critics as liars who distort their actions or words. And if the government can define what is a lie, it can define what is the truth. And it'll define it in its light, not by your foundation. If we could just look at an example, in February, the French Supreme Court declared unconstitutional a law that made it a crime to deny the 1915 Armenian genocide by Turkey. So anybody that denied the 1915 Armenian genocide in Turkey could be charged with a crime. It's a characterization that Turkey steadfastly rejects, despite the ruling. Various French leaders pledged to pass new measures punishing those who deny the Armenians' historical claims. So the impact of government limits on speech has been magnified by even greater forms of private censorship. And if we look at examples from that, most news organizations have stopped showing images of Muhammad. You know, they seem to have no misgivings about caricatures of other religious figures. The most extreme examples can be what was supplied by Yale University Press, which in 2009 published a book about the Danish cartoons titled The Cartoons That Shook the World. But guess what? They cut all of the cartoons so as not to insult anyone. So in a book about cartoons that insult the world, they edited it. The very right that laid the foundation for Western civilization really is increasingly viewed as a nuisance. And in some cases, it's viewed as a threat. So whether we view speech as inflammatory or hateful or discriminatory or simply false, society is denying speech rights in the name of tolerance, enforcing mutual respect through categorical censorship. Where is this going to lead us? You know, in troubled marriage, The West seems to be falling out of love with free speech, unable to divorce ourselves from this defining right. And, you know, many times because of stigmas and other things, many times because we may not like the group that is being criticized, we're left silent because we don't want to seem to be on the same side, to be allying, to be defending them. We have to be extremely careful, folks. Extremely careful to enter into, we just can't enter into these international agreements. That is going to be the undoing of us. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Hillbilly Logic on Missouri Grassroots Radio.
Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. You they walk a while, a country mile, in my hillbilly shoes.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details. Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
And welcome back to Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Kevin, the head hillbilly here on the Hillbilly Logic Show. Should be joined by some other hillbillies next week. And actually, a little bit later in this segment, I'm going to play a previously recorded segment. We used to be in a studio, two guys talking studio, and I had a round table in there talking about the myths of the auto industry. So we'll close things out this evening with the myths of the auto industry. It's some of the things that we've heard often on different things that affect auto insurance. Also, we may talk about in the process too some things that we should and should not buy used. You know, think about that for a minute. What's a lot of these things that we sell at yard sales or that we purchase at yard sales and other things? Now, you know what? Maybe it's not a good idea to purchase this used. So the roundtable will kick around those things. I think you might find it interesting and maybe a little humorous. So make sure that you catch that at the end of the close. You know, on the same note of religious tolerance and other things, I saw an article today out of Colorado that was really complaining and griping about the campaigns targeting the evangelical voters. And one of the examples they gave was they were talking to this Obama supporter who was given a flyer that said that Obama supported abortion on demand and mandated contraceptive coverage by religious charities. The flyer encouraged her to get similar pamphlets for a church in order to motivate the congregation to vote. And what they're doing is they're screaming foul. That you know, they're trying to reach out to religious voters. When in reality, I mean, quite frankly, Christian voters really vote or do not vote in large numbers. The percentage is really pretty poor. Saw a study recently that actually showed that those that declared themselves as part of the homosexual community vote at the clip of like 92%. You know, and I'm not trying to put different sides. I'm just saying that some groups vote, and some of those may be churchgoers. But the bottom line is that there's some causes that have a greater turnout, and some that don't. So these are just statistical facts. And it also shows, too, why, you know, some groups, you know, if you think that they're more likely to come out and vote, some politicians are going to cater to them a little bit more, too. But this particular lady said it threw her for a loop because she's a registered Democrat. And the whole thing was just, again, you know, they're just complaining that people are targeting those of faith I don't see a problem with it, point blank. I also saw where there was a chewing gum trick or ruse that led to an arrest from a 1976 cold case murder, and that was in Maine. This guy actually was arrested late Monday in Seattle. He's 63 years old now. He had been charged with killing a dental assistant that was 70 years old, retired dental technician, whose body was found with 23 stab wounds inside her home on June 12, 1976. And that the authorities said that the arrest marks the state's oldest unsolved murder in which an arrest had been made. They were able to obtain his DNA in July by asking him to participate in a chewing gum survey. Authorities earlier this year developed a DNA profile from blood found in Kimball's kitchen. So they asked him to chew gum in a chewing gum survey. Watch them. They'll try to get him off for entrapment. But they found a match that they thought was compatible to only one in 339 million. So they have charged him with a crime after all of these years, since 1976, actually. One of the things that might pique your interest or make you pay attention is the bullet tax. Yeah. You know, we've got different areas of the country that are considering the bullet tax. Chicago right now is one of them. They're eyeing it as trying to curb violence and raising money, being the key thing. And also, folks, let's face it. A lot of what's going on with ammunition and everything else now, I mean, it's a lot easier. What good is a gun if you cannot get bullets for it? So it makes a whole hell of a lot more sense to these people that want to see guns outlawed to go in a backdoor fashion of trying to either overprice or just make them unobtainable. And, again, what good's the gun if you can't get the ammunition for them? So it's a backdoor way to try to get rid of Second Amendment rights, to really be honest. But it calls in Chicago, they're proposing something that calls for a tax of a nickel for each bullet and $25 for each firearm sold in Cook County. So they estimate that the tax will generate $1 million a year, and they could use that money for various county services, including medical care for gunshot victims. They always make everything sound so good, and they always make it sound such a worthy cause, when in reality they're just trying to get people to go along with giving up their constitutional rights. But the Illinois State Rifle Association spokesman Richard Persons says that the tax wouldn't do anything to address gang violence, but would harm local businesses and law-abiding citizens. And there's, I have to agree completely. And again, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to hurt all the businesses in that county. Whatever, and what will people do? They'll it's not like they can't buy or purchase a gun in the next county. So it's more leftish crap that is trying to be passed. We're going to get into a little bit of Missouri state news as we close in on things. We've got a couple of things, including the St. Louis School District that has been given provisional accreditation by the Board of Education and how that affects those schools. For one thing, there was a lot of inquiries into the ability for these students to transfer out of these schools that weren't accredited by state law. Now, with them giving partial accreditation, guess what, folks? These students are no longer eligible to transfer out of these areas and go to another school for no cost. So, what do you think? You think that had anything to play in it? I can tell you that it might well had. Just in response to the earlier story about the gun tax and other things, we do have a Hillbilly Logic sound clip here that I was thinking about playing, but I do want to talk about, well, the school accreditation, and this was a news story from MissouriNet, and we appreciate them for providing it.
Governor Nixon is saying he applauds the vote to provisionally accreditate the St. Louis School District and says he recognizes the progress that has been made to the district that's gotten them to this point over the past 5 years. American Federation of Teachers President Mary Armstrong says it's a small step and a giant leap the district needs to make.
By no means are we truly satisfied and think that we have arrived. We want to become fully accredited. And in order to do that or to be that, we need to have 9 of the 14 points on the MSEP 5 schedule. So that's what I believe that the district will be shooting for, the employees of the district.
She says it could take up to 3 years for the district to achieve full accreditation.
2015. But we want to make sure that within 2 to 3 years that we have accomplished the 9 points that are necessary and possibly even more.
Mary Ferrucci, MissouriNet, Jefferson City.
And again, we'd like to thank MissouriNet for those clips. Here's the Missouri Grassroots Minute by Terry Varner.
This is the Grassroots Minute. Currently, 4 St. Louis City citizens are appointed by the governor to serve as St. Louis police commissioners, along with the mayor of St. Louis, which goes back to the Metropolitan Police Bill of March 1861. The St. Louis Police Department constituted the largest quasi-military organization in the state at that time, and the police bill was a Civil War measure passed by people who wanted to control it as part of the Civil War. Every now and then, there is a call to abolish the St. Louis Board of Police Commissioners and give control of the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department to the mayor's office. The newest effort to take away citizens' control is on the November 6th ballot as Proposition A, and has been orchestrated by the powerful police union and the mayor's office. A no vote on Proposition A will continue to allow citizens' commissioners to hire, fire, and establish rules for St. Louis City police officers. A yes vote on Proposition A, citizens would lose their ability to administer the police department, which would revert to the mayor and his city democratic political machine. For the betterment of the citizens and the St. Louis Police Department, it should be free of political corruption and continue to be managed by the citizens at large. We urge a no vote on November 6th on Proposition A. I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
And welcome back to the Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. I am the head hillbilly, Kevin, as we're going to close things in. Like I said, we're going to close things out this evening with auto myths and things that you should and shouldn't buy used. But right now, there was we have been having some discussion in Jefferson, Jeff City, the state capital, by a committee that has been put together to deal with rewriting the sex laws in the state, and also trying to define some of the terminology that exists in those. And again, we'd like to thank MissouriNet for this clip.
Legislators working on rewriting the state's criminal code are now examining the language of sex crimes. State representatives and senators are working to bring Missouri's criminal code up to date, and part of that is rewriting definitions and penalties for sex crimes. Lisa Keithley tells the committee that because she was sexually molested while sedated at the hospital, her aggressor received a minimal punishment.
It's not enough to look at me and tell me that what happened to me doesn't count as forcible compulsion because he didn't hold me down. He didn't have to hold me down. The drugs did.
Missouri Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence Director Colleen Coble says the current statute also doesn't go far enough in defining forcible rape. She says right now, when a man is raped, state law doesn't call it rape.
There are consequences in the lives of survivors when they are told that what happened to them is deviant sexual intercourse as opposed to the reality of their experience, which is rape. And I would submit that we need to reflect those realities in our statutes and make certain that the crime that is experienced is the crime that is charged.
The committee is also looking at language and crimes of stalking, harassing, lack of consent, how sex organs and genitalia are defined, and adult abuse acts. It meets again next week to continue discussion on sex crimes in our state. Jessica Machetta, Missouri Net, Jefferson City.
And once again, we hope that that the politicians that are looking over these laws do it with discernment and wisdom in their decision making, and that there are no unintended consequences that happen to arise from any changes that may occur. And it's always it's tragic. All of these sex crimes are a tragic thing. The heart breaks for the individuals that have experienced these. And if there's a way that we can create areas of that we can help to give or prevent victims from occurring, that should be considered. But we also, we want to look and make sure that there's not any unintended consequences in the process. What about the Nobel Peace Prize? This isn't exactly on Missouri news, but the Nobel Peace Prize, once again, has been just completely a sham. Does anybody actually ever pay attention to the Nobel Peace Prize other than just to see if they could go a little bit more loony every single year? It means nothing. It really does. It means nothing other than the people that may be receiving it or the group. It doesn't even have to be a person now. As we know that, pardon me, the European Union just received it. Now, the European Union received the Nobel Peace Prize because it used to be a continent that was ripe with war and everything. And the European Union's helped to bring all those people together. Are you kidding me? They're on the verge of collapse. One of you look over there. Nigel Farrell had this to say.
The Norwegian Nobel Committee has decided that the Nobel Peace Prize for 2012 is to be awarded to the European Union.
Now, with us now is someone who I know would like to offer his congratulations, the leader of UKIP, Nigel Farage. Here is your opportunity to congratulate them on winning that prize.
Yeah, astonishing, isn't it? And I suspect that the Nobel Prize itself will be brought into disrepute by this. I mean, look, just a few days ago, Angela Merkel went to Athens to be greeted with Molotov cocktails, a violent demonstration, and almost unbelievably, people dressed up in Nazi uniforms. What we're seeing is a Europe being divided from north to south by the Eurozone, And the Germans are being rude about the Greeks, and vice versa, so we're seeing actual disharmony caused by this project.
So peace breaking out everywhere, Nick. Well, defend this prize.
The European Union is an MEP, so he should go and accept this award on behalf of the European Union.
would you go and accept it, Nigel Farage?
I think I'd struggle to accept that one. No, it'll be Mr. Van Rompuy or Barroso.
He's also a friend of yours.
I get on terribly well with all of them. The one thing you can be certain of is that the person that picks up this award will be somebody who is unelected and committed to the abolition of democracy in the nation states of Europe.
Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. You they walk a while, a country mile in my
Tonight's topic, the terrorist attack last month on U.S. Embassy in Libya that killed four Americans, including our ambassador to that country. 3 days after the attack, the White House was still in fact-finding mode.
What I'm telling you is this is under investigation. This is obviously under investigation, an ongoing investigation.
Yes, good thinking. Wait till you have all the facts straight. Although, in the same press conference, we did establish a hunch.
We have no information to suggest that it was a pre-planned attack. The unrest we've seen around the region has been in reaction to a video.
Yeah, crappy Mohammed movie. That thing's like The Ring. 3 days after you watch it, embassies just burst into flames. So the administration's story was that one anti-Muslim video on YouTube happened to touch off a massive protest. That happened to occur on the anniversary of September 11th and happened to spread quickly to 27 other places. Seems implausible, but 2 days after Carney's press conference, they had an explanation for that, too.
Our current assessment is that what happened in Benghazi was, in fact, initially a spontaneous reaction to what had just transpired hours before in Cairo, almost a copycat of the demonstrations against our facility in Cairo, which were prompted, of course, by the video.
Copycats. So Libya wasn't The Ring, it was The Ring 2. So 5 days after the attack, the White House was still sticking to the video story. But on the eighth day, the director of National Counterterrorism Center went in front of Congress with a slightly different assessment.
I would say yes. They were killed in the course of a terrorist attack on our embassy.
Of course, he's going to say that was a terrorist attack. He runs the Counterterrorism Center. He sees everything as terror prime. It's sort of like if you ask the Ghostbusters, they blame ghosts. You know what I mean? if you ask the Foo Fighters, they probably blame it on food. Anyway, the gentleman had company in making that assessment.
It is, I think, self-evident that what happened in Benghazi was a terrorist attack.
Oh! How bad does it suck to the White House press secretary? Hey, get out there and tell him it was the video. Okay. Get out there and tell him it was a terrorist attack. Okay. Not to mention, judging by the sounds of that video, they apparently make him stand in a very special place while answering questions. But you know what? It's not so weird. I mean, it started out, the administration wasn't quite sure what happened. They made a couple of statements, which later they wanted to take back. And by day eight, they were very clear that this was a terrorist attack. So the president's spokesman says it's a terrorist attack. Cut to the president of the United States just 3 hours later.
I don't want to speak to something until we have all the information. What we do know is that the natural protests that arose because of the outrage over the video were used as an excuse by extremists to see if they can also directly harm U.S. interests.
So do you guys talk to each other? Or I mean, for God's sake, Hillary Clinton got the memo.
What happened in Benghazi was a terrorist attack.
So come on, Mr. President, try it again in a safer space.
I heard Hillary Clinton say that it was an act of terrorism. Is it? What do you say?
Well, we're still doing an investigation. There's no doubt that the kind of weapons that were used, the ongoing assault, that it wasn't just a mob action.
And? I mean, it wasn't just a mob action, but it wasn't an act of terrorism either? What does that leave? What is it, Libyan St. Patrick's Day? What was going on? A quinceañera that got out of hand? Now, a cynic would argue that the president's been unwilling to admit our embassies were targeted by terrorists, because that will make him look bad right before an election. But hey, maybe all this back and forth has just been honest confusion. Maybe it just took a week or two for everyone to figure out what really happened in Libya. That's possible, right?
Our sources tell us that law enforcement officials knew within 24 hours that this was a terror attack.
Well, two things apparently have become clear. The attack on our embassy was planned and coordinated. The response to it, not so much. We'll be right back.
Too bad, too bad, too bad. Right again.
Too bad is right. If you listen to some of those clips that was in there, just like whenever the president said, the one thing that we do know was that it was caused by mob action after viewing a video. You know, I thought even though in the last debate this was touched on, I thought that the challenger Mitt Romney could have. I know it's a delicate line to perceive to be attacking, but I mean, quite frankly, there is absolutely no way that this wasn't just that they're buying time to try to buy us to get us past Election Day is what they're trying to do. They're buying time to get us by past Election Day, attacking anybody that asks any questions, acting like it's surely political. Whenever this if this had been the previous administration, it would have been hogtied and run out of town by now. Have you guys ever thought about you know, some of the different things that you hear whenever it comes to insurance? You know, what about the color of the car? Red cars or are more expensive to insure than other colors. These different myths and different things have been bannered around for years. Well, one night on the show we had a roundtable, and this is one of the things that we talked about. We talked about some of the auto myths, and we talked about some of the things you should and shouldn't purchase. So it's once again, wanted to share it with you this evening to close the show out. I thank you for listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Hillbilly Logic. I am Head Hillbilly Kevin Harnett. I appreciate your patronage, and appreciate any support that you could give to Missouri Grassroots Coalition. So and definitely the Secret Santa. Closing things out, thank you for joining me this evening.
Let's touch on this particular topic, which would happen to be car insurance myths. You guys have all, how many of you have heard, is it myth or is it fact? How many of you have heard, can the color of your car raise your rates?
I've heard black that. Does that. I've heard red doesn't.
Is that true or is it a myth?
I heard red does.
Raise your rates?
We all say red
theft
does.
Because of theft?
Red actually, well, I don't know. Progressive insurance,
that's a liberal out there.
I know. And I've never found them to really be that competitive.
No, me neither. But they tell you they are.
Right. And I hate their commercials. They have the worst commercials.
Unless, of course, Progressive you want to advertise on here matters. In that case, you are.
I love your commercials. That whole thing was great. You know, just look at that. But the lady's got to go on them. She drives me nuts.
She's actually a comedian.
Ha ha.
No, in real life. I mean, she's just trying to buy some beans.
Well, I've got nothing personal against her. I just don't want to see her again.
She's just trying to afford progressive insurance rates.
So what do you guys think? You think that myth is correct or not?
Josh, you're driving a red Cougar.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I know that the cops tend to like it, so I'm going to say your insurance will go up.
No, that's inadvertently, though. I mean, whenever you're getting a quote, do they ask you for your color of your car and actually put you in a higher bracket because of the color? That's what I'm talking about.
Not when you're getting a quote. They don't. I've never been asked to color one. I've got a quote.
The old collector cars insurance, as far as I know, they asked me what color it was and the VIN number and everything.
Well, yeah.
I guess for originality and stuff.
Well, that's true. I mean, that would also have a factor on the value of the vehicle, too, I'm sure. The fact is red will not cost you more green. And roughly one in four.
Will that cost you more than green cars?
It will not cost you more money. So
no.
So that one there is definitely a myth. What about the cars that get stolen the most? What do you guys think? Older, newer? Is it mostly newer cars that get stolen?
I thought it was Chryslers.
Yeah.
Which is an oxymoron. But it's because for years they were so easy to
break into.
Yeah, hotwire. They took one reach. Plop. They're starting them and driving off with them. So they were one of the most stolen vehicles.
Well, actually, I do believe they make the list.
I thought it used to be
at least in a.
Well, they were the most desired to be stolen.
What about new cars? I mean, does it need to be? I mean, are they predominantly newer cars that get stolen?
I would think they would be harder to break into.
I would think they would be 4 or 5 years old because the parts are more valuable.
And that's what's more likely they're going to do, other than retitling a vehicle. Correct. It's going to be a little. And the fact is. That the older cars, the 10 most stolen vehicles reported in 2008 were a 94 Honda Accord, a 95 Honda Civic, 89 Toyota Camry, 97 Ford F-150 pickup, an 04 Dodge Ram pickup, Greg's Dodge connection, 2000 Dodge Caravan, 96 Jeep Cherokee, Grand Cherokee, 94 Acura Integra, and a 99 Ford Taurus. And this one's a little confusing, but 2002 Ford Explorer. It's not that I didn't enjoy my Ford Explorer.
Are the rates higher on those then? Because
they are the most reported stolen, and that will factor in on the rates.
Yeah, most of those years, I would think they only have liability, not
but,
even.
But then six of them American made, and I think we should be proud of them.
Very good.
What do we got, M&M? What about your insurance will cover you if your car is stolen, vandalized, or damaged from hail or fire? Just
natural,
overall.
Natural disasters?
What are you saying? What's the question again?
Or natural. That you're going to be covered if it gets stolen, vandalized, hail damage, storm, fire, anything like that.
Is that going to raise your rates?
No. Are you going to be covered?
Yeah.
Protected.
If you have full coverage, comprehensive.
Right. Some people, if they just get out there and they get the absolute minimum and they're just trying to get insurance so that they can drive the streets.
The general?
They will go with, the general. They will go with, there's a magic money moment. They will go with liability only, and unless they've got comprehensive, it will not. Now, I'll tell you something else that everybody can check into. If you don't want to have full coverage as far as a... just to go for lower rates, but you want it protected from anything but your act of driving, like stolen or damaged on a parking lot or anything else, you can get comprehensive on a liability policy. And I know that because that's a route that we went with him on that Cougar. So that if it got stolen or if it was damaged in any other way, other than him just mucking it up and putting it in a ditch,
right.
Then,
which somebody was actually.
Then you can get, and it's very, very inexpensive to get comprehensive added to a liability policy.
Really?
Yeah.
So if I'm not worried about myself wrecking a vehicle, but I know that.
Right. I mean, that way at least you're kind of taking
right.
it outside of your control. So if you put it in a ditch or something, it's kind of bad on you. But at the same time, if somebody else messes it up on a lot or something, you got it covered.
Right.
And it wasn't, I forgot what it was, but I mean, it was a matter of...
I hope
of,
our listeners found that helpful.
Well, I hope so, too.
If it helps one person.
It's more than our job. What about this? What about if your car is totaled, will your insurance pay off what is owed to the company automatically?
No.
So you could have short...
Yeah, you can be in
the red. Is it a blue book thing? They just tell you what they think it's worth?
Hopefully you're not...
No, I know that's actually happened to a lot of people.
Well, sure it has.
Yeah.
And
because you bring in a vehicle, you drive a 2-year-old vehicle, and you get the bug for another brand new one while you pull it in, and of course the car dealership gives you the minimum and charges you the maximum, and they pay off your old car.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're another $5,000 in a red besides what you could have purchased the
That's
new
right.
car for.
Yes.
So now you're upside down by $10,000 on a Cobalt.
Upside down being the key.
Not that there's a
and
thing
in that case,
cobalt, in case you're a GM.
That is where that same dealer will probably offer you gap insurance.
That's true.
Which will, you know, first $600 or whatever it is, then we're gonna go ahead and make sure that that gap is covered.
And we're going to finance that.
And we're going to finance
$600
it.
$600 is going to turn into $2,000.
What about $12 a month for 600?
What about your car? What if your car is stolen or damaged in an accident? Is your insurance company, are you going to get a loaner or a rental in that case?
Well, I would think it depends on if you've got it written into the policy.
Insurance, I would think.
So it's not going to be a universal thing?
No.
I don't think it is.
Well, a lot of people think that it is pretty universal until they find out that, hey, you don't get a rental. You know, and then
right.
Somebody's going to have to pick you up. So that would be a case to where that is a rider.
That's something you need to ask.
That's
for
a rider.
Yikes, that's not
when you're checking
out
for insurance, a lot of these are good ideas.
What do you guys think overall? Do drivers of sports cars get more tickets?
I see them all every day down the highway pulled over. I'd say yes.
It's tough.
I saw two or three Mustangs. I've seen two or three Mustangs in the last week pulled over.
Right, in 2009, what was that?
Dean, I just thought it's tough not to drive a sports car fast.
Now you're giving Josh.
Right.
Well,
so you guys are
the Civic guys running around trying to do the same thing too.
You're saying.
So you guys are saying that you are going to get more tickets typically if you're driving a sports car.
On your back, like Josh said earlier.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yes.
In 2009, the number one ticketed vehicles in America was the Hummer 2 and the H3. So the H2 and the H3.
Hummer drivers?
Wow.
Hummer drivers. They received five times more than
the
next
speeding?
Closest
is that speeding?
Vehicle.
Is that speeding or is that ticketing?
That's just ticketing.
Okay, ticketing could mean rolling. Maybe those owners roll more stop signs.
They certainly can't stay in the lines as easily as we can in our smaller vehicles.
No. Well, they're perceived as being able to pay these tickets. So
they get less mercy, you think?
Yeah,
maybe?
I would think so.
I'm going to lend some credence to that.
So
I think Glenn's right.
I think that would factor in. I've gotten off before because of a circumstance. Literally.
I thought you were going to say a junky car.
No. That would happen to be. There was an instance where I got pulled over a week and a half ago, and I had surgery on my face that day, and it looked like I had a softball on the side of my head, and the policeman was so apologetic. It's like, can I see? I just pulled you over because your headlights out.
Did you ever get that fixed?
Yeah.
That's for all your troopers.
So
out
he's
there.
Like, can I see an ID? And I showed it to him, and he's actually even looks like he's shaking a little bit, and he's like, do you have proof of insurance? And I go, I can't find it anywhere. I said, and he goes, do you really have it? And I said, yeah, I've got it. Okay, that's good enough. I'm not going to cite you or anything.
He
seem like a nice guy.
Have you been pulled over before? Because I've got a feeling you would get more of that.
No.
No,
they wouldn't mistake me for you, Greg.
I was just wondering, at what point did you tell him this is highly contagious?
No, I didn't.
That's what he started
out of it.
But it was definitely, I mean, like I said, he was almost hurrying me along. It was apologetic. I almost felt sorry for him.
So, folks, listen, the truth matters. It really does.
Just, I'm thinking about maybe marketing.
Kevin was quite honest with that policeman.
In a capitalistic moment, you know, maybe marketing some different packages for drivers to put on. You know, before they hit the highways.
A little arrow thing through the head.
I'm on my way.
I'm not sure if that would get you off or get you arrested.
Right.
One or the other, I don't know.
Well, I got an email the other day that would get you off.
What was that?
A guy's buddy shot him in the head with an arrow.
Yeah. I saw that.
Oh, really?
That's a little more than a hook on a fishing trip.
Oh.
Even though that hurts like heck, too. There's been a few have to have those cut out.
Back of his head.
They took a hunk of skull out.
It was a plug.
Oh,
a plug.
Like a silver dollar size.
No.
It was.
No, it was bigger. It might have been a little bigger.
So
they had to saw it out and pull.
So the Hummer drivers received five times the amount of ticketing that the next closest cars.
Hey, we're having a conversation.
Drivers of three different Scion models was the rest too. So also Diane's making
those
yeah.
little things.
Oh, I did the Xbox drivers. That's what I'd go for if I was a cop.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, I'm telling you.
You can have this or you can have that. And
they've got their little bump.
The top 10 list. The top 10 list on the other list includes.
You don't drive an Xbox, do you, Mike?
No, I do not.
Okay.
There's a side back there. We didn't know.
Drivers of two models of Mercedes-Benz, two Toyota models, and a Subaru Outback station wagon. How'd that get thrown in there?
Oh, those are fast.
The
At the other end of the spectrum, the least ticketed vehicles. What do you think one of them might be? Now, this kind of flies in the face. The least ticketed would fly in the face of Glenn's theory of no mercy.
Well, it used to be.
Well, yeah, but you have to count the figure, the number of cars.
The new Corvettes.
You have to figure the number of them on the road.
That is true.
Josh and I are going.
It doesn't say percentage wise.
No.
Are we right? We're right.
And this is probably a lower number production vehicle, a Jaguar XJ.
Wow,
Jay. Well, they can't
get me caught by cops. Here's another, followed by the Chevrolet Suburban, Chevrolet Tahoe, Chevrolet CK pickup, Buick Park Avenue, Mazda 6, Buick Rainier, Oldsmobile Silhouette, Buick Lucemi. I don't know.
Lucerne.
It's Lucerne.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's the Facebook font. And GMC Sierra pickups.
Everything's a Facebook font.
Damn that Facebook and their fun. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back as we talk about it. Let's get on some stuff that really relates to everybody every single day, and that might happen to be, what are you going to purchase used, and especially in this economy? There's a lot of people that are looking
for
bargains. What are
you going to or not?
What are you going to purchase used, and what do you not want to purchase used?
I do not want to purchase used food.
Okay.
That is it.
Already been chewed, ABC?
Okay,
I'm going
to go with that.
Or
I'm going to go with condoms.
Pre-digested.
Well, I don't want to buy those.
No.
I'm going to let Josh answer next because I can't come back after that.
You guys are hitting it.
That is
softball. I mean, in a major way.
We want to thank you for talking to us.
That's true.
Let's dig a little deeper.
I'm still blanking out here.
The underwear is almost in a category.
That
was something that has sold at a yard sale.
I just want to know. There's nothing wrong with the person selling them. I'm going to tell you.
I understand.
That.
You're right. It's the
what
other.
About
it's the purchaser.
Know. Used mattresses, kind of borderline.
Used mattresses.
Good.
What do
morning.
You guys think?
Okay, I'm going to tell you something. I recently spoke with a fellow who has a used, kind of a whatnot furniture and appliance and everything else. He said he can't keep enough used mattresses.
I've heard the same thing.
He told me that last week. I'm just
way overpriced.
And that's why. Because let's face it, the commercial that talks about they're full of your skin
bed bugs
and no thank you.
I'm telling you, a man told me.
No, I know you're right.
Yeah,
I've heard the same thing.
I believe that too. Yeah. But really, that's number one on the list. Of things not to purchase used.
That
would make a lot of sense.
And one of the things they said, there's no way that you're going to be able to be able to detect bed bugs just from a visual sighting. That if you actually did get it treated for that, it'd be 300 to 3,000, depending. And then on top of that, the one thing that really surprised me in this report more than anything was fleas can remain dormant for up to 12 months. For up to 12 months without a meal, without anything. So they could stay alive in that mattress for up to 12 months.
That's amazing.
So
I once did the same thing.
That's another case. Stay alive in a mattress for 12 months.
Without a meal.
Where do you think we found you for this show?
Some
of these things on here actually do kind of surprise me whenever we're looking at things. What would you guys say? I mean, just try to hit another one that might be on this list. We're not going to the toilet
shoes?
Paper.
No.
Shoes?
Now, you know what? Shoes is a very valid.
Mm-hmm. But
even though a lot of them are sold at Goodwill and other places.
Oh, my gosh, yard sales. Goodwill sells it.
But if you ever notice that, if you're watching TV, you're going to see those toenail fungus commercials along with some of these others. And
athlete foot,
right? And that's from
that's contagious.
That's very contagious, especially you're going to see a lot of it in high school kids that take showers. And Glenn, there might be something on this list that is dear to your heart. What might that be? the leader of Doc Talk.
That something not to buy?
Not to buy used. It's highly advised not to buy used.
Wow. Yeah.
Fishing related.
It is.
Yes.
Waiters?
No. Well, waiters.
Poles.
It would depend on if they're chest waiters or knee waiters, maybe. I don't know.
Well, you know, a lot of people, you're out in that water for a long time,
that's
and
true.
It's cold.
Maybe it'll be a boat. I don't know.
A boat is on that list.
It is.
A boat is on that list. And one of
the
reasons
that's
you the wouldn't think
you
that, you know, naturally you have the huge savings.
Sure.
But their biggest objection to boats, they typically don't get serviced as often as cars because people need cars to get back and forth to work. But their boats get abused because a lot of them don't hit the water for a long time.
I would like to take this opportunity for any future sponsors to let to know that Glenn will take a boat this year as a sponsorship for Doc Talk.
And used or new.
Right. He is not that picky.
And we have plenty of marinas that we will be talking about in future episodes. Now, if you buy it from a dealer or somebody has had the opportunity to check it out, you know, then, or naturally too, the more that you know about boats, the safer that's going to be too. Because it's just like a musical instrument or anything else, you're going to know what to look for that could cause you problems down the road.
That's not what you were looking for, right? Not boat, something else?
No, boat was it.
Oh, okay.
A boat was it because they said, you know, they were talking to even pawn shops, and pawn shops are real reluctant to take them in because they like to check things out. They like to, you know, it's not like most of them are located close to some body of water that they
right.
can check them out onto. And it's not like you can start most of them either.
The other thing
without
is,
being in water, because they're water cooled.
Boat repair is very expensive.
Maintenance is
just repair.
Right.
I mean, if it's something.
If
on
you've
the
got
boat,
a boat, repair is maintenance.
No, repair is normal. Repair is normal.
That is that's something.
What do they say it is? Is a
what about what's one
it's
of the other
hole
things?
In the water right. you throw money into?
All right, Greg. Yeah, you know somebody has a resale shop. What's probably one of his
well,
biggest?
I didn't really say that.
Hey,
did I?
Now, don't be changing up on me.
I do.
What is one of the? What's one of the other items that is going to be the most sold?
Sofa.
Sofa. It's
Kevin,
may very
take
well
sofa
be.
For 50. No.
You'll take what I give you.
Survey says.
Baby car seats and cribs.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
it's
going to
be
go.
Big. Those are big sellers.
Some excellent
sales,
ones at Chris has used furniture.
Now, one
he
of the things
that
is.
Place. Now, you quit that.
Anybody that knows that.
Yes.
You're going to have a lot of recalls. You're going to have a lot of different issues on all those scenes. The other thing is that a lot of the car seats you can't really inspect thoroughly. They've got, some of them even have fabric that cannot be removed.
Really?
And then, you know, and babies are a little messy. You have trouble getting all the germs and stuff without being able to totally remove it and wash it in hot water.
Right.
So, you know there's an expiration date on those baby seats?
Yes, there is. Now.
And they're only,
so
many years, a couple
but
years.
But who comes after you?
Now, here's the other thing, too.
Police, if you put it in a yard sale?
Guilds, yeah. You just don't want the child
be,
being in a seat.
I guess there's a recommendation.
Now, if I was a car seat manufacturer, I would want to put one on, like, 2 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
That would mean, yeah, you're going
to
want
to.
That
because
way people
I want you
look
to get rid of
it.
I want to sell my brand new car seat.
I have a 7-year-old, and so we got rid of the car seat about a year and a half ago. One, the fire department will check out the seat, and while they don't give you a piece of paper that says if your child dies, we're not responsible, but they'll check out any seat. You just drive up to the department, and they'll give you the green light or the red light.
Right.
Great to know.
Car seats that all 7 of us put our butts in were removable like a baby seat.
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Because they're not. And so I would say that any of your seats in your car right now are dirtier than any kid's seat's ever going to be.
I guarantee you.
I don't know.
He just heard your story about a policeman letting you go.
Those two are funny, especially with as expensive as those kids.
Right.
It's strange.
Right,
yes, it is.
It's strange. The expiration date, you're right, though. They all have one. I just don't think that's valid. I think that's a driving
sale. It's like a seatbelt expiration date.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think? Engagement rings and fine jewelry?
Oh,
should that be on the list?
Better not. I think you could save a lot of money, and I don't think any woman would want to have gotten her ring. Oh, you got
second,
you'd
be surprised. From,
heck,
you'd be surprised.
Yeah, this guy was getting divorced. I got it for a steal.
No,
well,
the biggest thing.
It's a diamond.
Tell her that, though.
Do what?
You didn't tell her that.
No, my
child.
It was
good. Look at this great ring I'm giving you to showcase my love. Period. Paragraph.
I'm going to tell you. I don't think a woman really cares.
No.
I mean, when they don't care that little kids' arms and legs are macheted off and in blood diamonds, they could give her less if it's been used.
You got to quit watching movies.
What?
That's the blood diamonds
theory. He's got to quit watching
blood
movies.
Blood diamonds.
Because all these diamonds are all blood diamonds.
Well, no, they all come from that region, and we all know that they use slave labor and hack off legs and arms and their crew. Watch Blood Diamonds. It's a true movie.
There we go.
Hollywood is true.
I have to watch it.
Check it out.
By the way, we got to get out of here because Sheen's Corner is going to start at any time.
Oh, my.
No.
Who?
Martin Sheen.
Oh. Oh, okay.
Not Martin.
But,
hey,
it's
not
Martin.
It's
his boy, Charlie.
You need to do a podcast on
dating
your program.
Myself. So their biggest objection to buying jewelry from individuals is the fact of fraud. Fraud fact.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. How are you going to know an 18 carat from a 14 carat?
Oh, my gosh. They're very
anything else. You know,
people wouldn't lie.
How are you going to know whether it's really that ruby or whether it's some other type of
people
crystal?
People wouldn't lie.
Also on the list, and this one's a little surprising too, and a lot of people do it, video cameras and digital cameras. Now, I'm going to have to intercede here. I don't necessarily agree with them because they're going strictly on the low end. Like, why would you want to pay $20 for a used digital camera whenever you can buy it for $40? Well, first of all, I mean, that's very low end. It would depend on the equipment that you're getting and your knowledge of that equipment. So I kind of disagree.
Well, I mean, if it's a $1,000 camera and you're getting it for $200,
right? And you're knowledgeable about cameras and you know that everything seems like it's functional and well, you can check them out pretty good.
Oh, yeah. You can,
especially if you're looking at digital. I mean, you can probably see it on the screen.
You know, one of the biggest things to look at, I found out too late on digital cameras. I'm just throwing this out for your listeners.
What's that?
The batteries.
Oh,
that's
true.
That is so expensive. I bought a camera I really liked. The camera, it's not like a super, super expensive camera, but a few hundred dollars. But I get about 400 shots, and I pay $10 for another battery.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true.
You don't get rechargeable ones. They're $10.
Right. That's true.
For the
battery.
You
do want to,
that's right.
You want to get some
four
rechargeable.
4 cents a shot when you figure
it's a big
it
deal.
Like that.
Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. They walk a while, a country mile in my hillbilly
shoes. For joining us tonight on Hillbilly Logic.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.